Welcome, everybody, to another live episode of Strong Style here on the Outlaw Nation channel. So thankful for you tuning in and watching us here on YouTube, or if you're listening to us on the Outlaw Nation podcast network, thank you so much for doing that as well. I am one of your hosts here, the Outlaw, John Rocha, coming to you live from the Outlaw Nation studios here in my place, joined as always by my man down there in Orlando, who is just living amongst the boxes, Aaron Turner. How are you, man?
It's really true. Like, I can make quite the box for it, but, you know, I'm moving. Becky Lynch is having a baby. What are you bringing to the table, Rocha? Like, what's going on? What's going on with you?
Here's what I bring to the table. Brian Cox.
I
interviewed Brian Cox earlier today. A lot of fun with him, talking to him about all kinds of stuff, including X2. We talked about the possibility of Stryker coming back in the MCU after the purchase from Disney. We talked about, the rights going back over, I guess, purchase with Fox. Yeah. Sure. So going over there. We also talked about Succession, talked about everything he's doing now and what he wants to do in the future. And so a lot of fun. He's got a new film called Last Moment of Clarity, which is a kind of a Hitchcockian film that is coming out on May 19th for VOD. But look, that was exciting. But today, our episode may be just as exciting to me, because this match we're going to talk about today is John Cena versus CM Punk from 2011's Money in the Bank. It is one of those matches that are like, where you remember where you were when it happened. You remember where you were when you watched this match, because it was a match like none other before and none other since, in my opinion, for a number of reasons. But not only that, we're also talking, as Aaron mentioned, about Becky Lynch's pregnancy. She announced it. First time that's ever happened, where someone's pregnant, I think, and has given the title to somebody else. And then, of course, we're also going to do our Dark Side of the Ring review for the UWF, which was one of the best episodes they had this season. Really incredible to think about the kind of maniacal people that get involved in wrestling and how they still engender loyalty no matter how insane they are. And I mean, covered in Vaseline and cocaine and nothing else. Crazy stuff to talk about with that Dark Side of the Ring review. But first, we're going to hit this match, I think, Aaron, right?
Yeah, it'll be our match of the week. We're trying something different here on the show. We're trying to kind of, I don't know, like mix different things together, because I think people want more than just us to talk about a match, because we could do that all day.
Yeah.
But I think people want the other stuff in there as well. So we're working on stuff.
Yeah.
So just bear with us.
We're working it out. You know, we're trying to make it all come together as best we can. And just to let you know, the Streamlabs and the Super Chats are open. For those of you who are big wrestling fans who are joining us live, please. We like to get that $100 mark for donations here for the show. That would be great on the Streamlabs or on the Super Chats. I'd be quite excited to hit that mark and enjoy stuff from you. So come on, help us hit that mark, and let's do that today as we're doing it live, because that's positive stuff we're trying to create here in the universe, giving you content, giving you things you can enjoy. You can come in and ask us questions live if you want as well, or just send it in through the Streamlabs or the Super Chats. So much to get into here with Aaron concerning this match. And where do you want to start from, my man?
Well, I gotta start with a confession. So this was 2011 when this match happened, and I was out of the wrestling game on this one, guys. Like, there was a period of time where I think from about 2009 to about 2012, I was not watching wrestling at all. Like, I woke up one day and I said, why do I spend 3 hours every Monday watching Monday Night Raw when I'm not enjoying it? Like, why do I do that to myself? But it was like, I was such zombied into watching Monday Night Raw every Monday. And I was just like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, there's girls out there to chase, man. I don't know what's going on with me. Bars to go to. I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, this match was off my radar for a long time until people told me about it. And I saw the pipe bomb promo. Like, that's something I saw immediately. We can talk about that in a minute. But
sure,
a confession that this was off my radar, and this, you know, people had to tell me about. This wasn't something that was in my brain, like, oh my God. So this is something I had to go back and watch. It was probably like my second time seeing it. And it's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember, well, now I'm the opposite of Aaron, because this is back when I was spending 3 hours watching wrestling and not having a problem with it. I was enjoying everything that was happening here. I was a big fan of CM Punk's turn into this pipe bomb guy, this idea that he was going to, you know, take the belt, possibly just the idea that someone could win the belt and walk away and like leave, because this was a very real storyline, this idea that his contract was coming up. And of course, they referenced the Bret Hart situation that happened when he left for WCW. Certainly, was it Sonny who took the WCW or WWE title and threw it in the trash?
Alundra Blaze.
Sorry, when she went over to WCW. So there's been a history of what people do. I mean, I think Jeff Jarrett like wrestled in the daytime one place and then at night was in a new federation. So that has happened before in the history of pro wrestling. Or was it Rick Rude? It was one of these guys that like wrestled.
Rick Rude, yeah.
Yeah, he showed up for one federation in the morning and then in the evening had signed and was wrestling for another federation. Pretty insane stuff. So a lot of crazy things have happened in the world of professional wrestling, but this was one of those ones that was kind of an anomaly because the fans were getting sick of Cena. This is like when this all things kind of started, this idea that there was they were being too family friendly, too corporate. This idea, and I don't mean in a negative way, like corporate culture or the corporate corporation. It was more that they felt like these other guys who were better wrestlers, better technical wrestlers, better beloved wrestlers who had come out of the indie circuits were getting squashed by, you know, people like John Cena. And this has been the history of wrestling, Aaron. You know, a lot of wrestlers felt that Hogan squashed them when they were trying to get a little bit of the rub with the title. A lot of wrestlers felt that Ric Flair squashed them, including Chris Jericho, when they were trying to get their runs at titles or move higher up the chain. So this has been something that has been in professional wrestling for quite some time. Cena was the face of the company, but the fans were turning on Cena. They were sick of the good guy, six move wrestler, and they wanted something more. And CM Punk seemed to sense that from a real place and also from a storyline place, and delivered one of the most incredible promos you're ever going to hear, maybe top five promos ever in the history of pro wrestling, with the pipe bomb promo.
Yeah, I mean, everything about CM Punk is counterculture. So from the straight edge to just the way that he works in the ring, the way that he talks on the microphone, the guy is never boring. That's why a lot of people follow him. He has great matches, and he can talk you into the room, into the building, whatever you need to do. And that explains why people to this day, even though he's been retired for 6 years or so, people are still clamoring for him to wrestle yet again. And I get it. I totally get it. I was a fan back then. Mm-hmm. Not so much these days, just for different reasons. Like I did some things I just don't understand, but we can get there later. But at this time, like the straight edge society was a thing, and it was him and Luke Gallows and Joey Mercury and Serena Deeb. And then all of a sudden, like when that started to get over, they killed it. Like Luke Gallows is gone. Joey Mercury's gone. Serena Deeb got pushed back down to NXT. So it just, whatever. And then they put him with the New Nexus, which was, if you remember that, you know, Michael McGillicuddy, David Otunga, and a young Husky Harris, or better known as Bray Wyatt these days. So a little bit of history there, but that didn't really work out either. It was interesting. Mason Ryan as well. It was an interesting time in CM Punk's career, but he's just kind of floundering. John Cena, of course, is the top guy here. And, you know, you got The Miz still hanging around, Rey Mysterio. These are your top guys. And here's CM Punk, this dude that's been kicking ass for so long, had already been world champion a couple times, two-time Money in the Bank winner, had all these accolades, and they're just pushing him further to the background.
Yeah.
His contract's coming up, and he says, you know what? Look, let me cut this promo out there. And there is a buddy of mine that can recite it word for word, which is pretty incredible. But it's just, it's one of those things where you don't expect it, and you kind of wonder, like, even the smart fans, like, look at each other, called each other, text each other, and was like, dude, was that real? Yeah. Like, it seemed like he was shooting for real on that. I mean, he's called Triple H Vince McMahon's doofus son-in-law and his idiotic daughter, and talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing? That's a famous thing. Just like the way that he talks about it, like his face isn't on the collector cups. And he said, you're the kind of people, you guys cheer me, but you're also the people that bother me at 4 a.m. in the airport trying to get an autograph that you just go sell on eBay later. So it's like, you're part of the problem, which, damn. he really hit everything. And then from that point on, it was like, all right, well, CM Punk is over like Rover. We got to get him into that world title picture.
Right.
And here's your man, your ultimate counterculture guy, you know, Rage Against the Machine versus the Machine, John Cena.
Well, it's kind of funny too, Aaron, right? Because it's another coming of Stone Cold, but not in the same form of Stone Cold. Stone Cold, when he came on in the Attitude Era, you know, you've got the jorts on Stone Cold versus True. John Cena, but Stone Cold's the one like against Vince, and you know, he's like the working man against his boss, and this idea of the blue collar boy, like fighting against the corporate bigwigs with their ties, and you know, the ones who are costing us our jobs, but they get to keep their jobs. All of that you had going on back in the 90s, that whole vibe of that across the country. But this is a CM Punk that is different. This is the new generation. These are Steve Austin's fans' kids who are coming up with CM Punk, and they gravitate to this guy who's got the tattoos, like you said, the straight edge stuff, that weird yin and yang Pepsi thing that he's got, the Cobra Commander tattoo, all of it. And the thing is, Punk wasn't one of these guys that like super stood out from the Nexus necessarily. He was one in the group. And then eventually he made his way, he made his name and did his thing. And that was incredible to watch how he kind of pulled himself out of the pack. And it wasn't until they started shoving him back down that finally someone spoke up, and that was Punk and the Pipe Bomb. For so many other wrestlers that it had, that like had bubbled up, but then got shoved down because of bad booking or, you know, a bad creative or what have you, or Vince not taking a liking to them. And when he spoke with the Pipe Bomb, he was speaking for so many wrestlers that for decades had to swallow Vince's shit, for lack of a better term, and take it because they're getting paid. And we see it now, even now, many wrestlers that we get frustrated with that don't get the push that they need or get wasted because of bad creative or bad decisions by Vince. We see it now, the frustrating part of it all, and especially with indie wrestlers, right? It also played with that on a subtle level too. This idea that Vince is always liking the bigger dudes, the bigger guys, the more babyface dudes. Here comes CM Punk, who's not necessarily that big, coming in, stepping in, and he's an indie wrestler. He's got the indie cred. So he's seen as more of like versus like, it's like Avengers versus like, you know, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It's how they look at it. And they don't think the Portrait of a Lady on Fire can really carry the company. But this was all kind of factored into this situation with Vince McMahon, with CM Punk, with John Cena. And you see it all come to bear in the Pipe Bomb and in the storyline leading up to this match.
Yeah, John Cena's Disney and CM Punk is A24. Like, let's just put it where it is right there. But yeah, man, 100%. Like, it is different from Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yes, they are very similar, but where Stone Cold Steve Austin is anti-establishment middle finger, CM Punk is like, nah. We're gonna take you mentally and make you change the culture. I'm gonna get inside your brain and I'm gonna show you why you need to change it. I mean, this guy was a trainer in Ring of Honor. Not only was he wrestling, but he was training young guys. So CM Punk always had an eye to the future. Mm-hmm. And something he always talked about, there's a great documentary about him leading up to this match on the WWE Network. You can check out. Okay. I think it's called Best in the World. But he talks about, like, leading up to that, you know, he trained guys. He was always looking to the future. He's always asking, okay, well, Punk, this is your storyline. You're going to lose to Alberto Del Rio and then, you know, and he's like, okay, well, what do I do after that? And they're like, well, we don't know yet. So we need to, he's like, okay, well, what am I doing after that?
Right.
He just always wanted to know what he was doing five steps down the road so he could better prepare his character for that. Mm-hmm. And you know, like when CM Punk and John Cena went against each other, you're going up against the juggernaut. So John Cena has all these merch sales, and CM Punk is the only guy during this era, the only wrestler to outsell John Cena t-shirt wise is CM Punk.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy considering, you know, as The Rock would say, you got your green shirt, you got your purple shirt, you got your orange shirt, you look like goddamn Fruity Pebbles out there. But CM Punk with one t-shirt, that Best in the World Chicago t-shirt, which is rad. It's amazing. It's probably one of the best t-shirts they ever made. Austin 316 obviously is up there. But damn, that shirt, every fan that I saw like walking around, every time I'd go to an event, they all had that Best in the World shirt on. And that thing was hot. But it started right here at this event in Chicago is where it started. It's the first time that he wore it. And it's the last time that you hear his entrance theme as it was then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, after this, it changed to Cult of Personality when he came back. So that's what a lot of people think of when they think of CM Punk now is Cult of Personality is his theme. Which, hey, man, it's a great one.
It is.
But let's get into the match here. And we've kind of set the stage for what's going on. CM Punk has a contract dispute. That was for real. Mm-hmm. That his contract really was coming up. But at a midday, I believe, of this day, or maybe the Friday before, he did sign a new contract.
Yeah.
So they just used that in storyline. But it was a real thing. It was up to the wire. And then he eventually decided, hey, I think I'm going to stick around. I think I could change the culture is exactly, I believe, the words that he used in that Best of the World documentary. He changed the thinking. So we have him versus John Cena. First thing is first. Holy crap. What a pop for CM Punk.
I mean,
dude,
I don't think, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever seen a pop like that. Maybe when Hogan and The Rock like finally got in the ring, maybe, because that pop for Punk is so, I mean, it's like a concussion blast. And you can see Cole and Jerry and Booker, they are legitimately shocked at the level and the loudness of the pop, because he is supposed to be the heel. The heel's not supposed to get the pop like that. And it was all-inclusive, almost the entire stadium, and they were just going crazy for him. And they immediately started undercutting it by saying it was, it's a hometown crowd, it's a hometown reaction, blah, blah, blah. I don't care where you're at. That is an incredible reaction from the fan base.
I know Chicago is a known wrestling town, but they have so much other stuff going on. They got the Bulls, they got the Blackhawks, they got all this other stuff going on. And then all of a sudden, wrestling is the person that you pop for, which is pretty crazy to think about it. Yeah. And just as much as they pop and they cheer for CM Punk, they boo the hell out of John Cena. Oof. And oh my goodness, I haven't seen that bad of boos for John Cena since ECW One Night Stand, when he took on Rob Van Dam for the WWE Championship. Right. And they were all so enclosed in that arena that John Cena had to walk through with the belt over his head, because they were punching him and throwing stuff at him. But man, it was a hostile Chicago crowd for this event. And that really just sets the tone for what they're doing here. And I mean, we could talk about the match, the nuances and stuff, but I'll tell you this, if nothing else, CM Punk brings the best out of everybody that he wrestles. Mm-hmm. He brings the best out of a 45-year-old Undertaker when they wrestled at WrestleMania.
Right.
He brings the best out of Kevin Nash and his old ass at the time. And he brought the best out of John Cena in this match. Probably the best match John Cena's ever had.
Wow.
I think so. Just the way that everything flows, the way that everything is done, the way that John Cena goes for those five moves of doom and CM Punk says no, pushes off, had all the reversals ready to go. So he knew when the crowd would be high, they knew when the crowd would be low, they knew how far they could push it before they would, before they would lose the crowd. And it was just very smartly done. It's very Hogan Rock in the way that they did it. Like, hey, we're going to use the crowd and we're going to use that against, we're going to use that crowd stuff against them. So they know, okay, we're going to go into a headlock here. It's going to be a low spot, but I'm going to, maybe punch John in the face real quick so people get a cheer out of it. So just the way they manipulate the crowd into doing what they want to do is pretty amazing. I mean, the mat work is second to none. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah. It's a thoroughly, I forgot how much, because I haven't seen the match since I saw it that year, that pay-per-view. I remember we all got together and, got high and ordered pizza, got drunk and watched this, because all of us didn't know what was going to happen. All of us didn't know what was going to happen. And it was just incredible to watch. And this is a damn good pay-per-view, by the way, from top to bottom. This is pretty good Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And seeing what happens here, because we just had Randy Orton versus Christian right before this match, which was a pretty brutal ending. And then you get into this match and right off the bat, just the fact that it took 20 minutes for the intros to be done. It was that long. I mean, Punk milked the hell out of that thing. He obviously had family ringside. But Cena is surprising, too, how he comes in, Aaron. I want to just go back to that real quick. Cena walks in. Normally, Cena, even when you're booing Cena, he'll do his routine at the top of the ramp. Yeah, he'll do all of that. And he'll make some kind of smart-ass comment with a smirk. Ooh, a little bit loud tonight. He'll do something crazy like that. Or, they're feeling it. Something stupid where you just go, oh. And then he runs down to the ring and does his thing. But this one, man, and I don't know, and I wonder what your thoughts on this are. Did he hear the boos and just go, screw it, I'm not doing my regular thing. I'm just going to march down and get it done. I know I've got to give the belt up to Punk. I'm just going to march down and get the job done. Do you think that was a little bit of gamesmanship from Cena kind of showing his hand a little bit? Or do you think this was planned that he knew to expect those boos and came just walking down the ring to wrestle?
I don't think anybody would anticipate that kind of booage, if you will. I don't think you can really plan for that at all. But I think that's kind of the same idea that he did with that ECW pay-per-view. You know you're going into hostile territory.
Right.
CM Punk's backyard. So the second you do that salute, the second you pull out that towel, the never give up towel, right, and you throw it in the crowd, someone's going to throw it back. I'm surprised someone didn't throw the shirt back because...
Oh, yeah. Well, he threw it to the only Cena fan at ringside.
I saw that. Yeah, the one Cena guy caught it in the front row. But at ECW One Night Stand, he goes to throw the shirt in the crowd, and they throw it back. And then he throws that again, and they throw it back. And they do it like three more times. It's incredible to watch.
It's awesome.
Kind of makes me want to add that match to the list because it's so fun. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't think it's gamesmanship, like you said. I think he was just like, well, I think this is a better way to get through it, so I don't get booed even more, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that contract really held over this entire match. Like, was CM Punk going to win? There's no way he could win because he's done. He's out. He said he's done. The dirt sheets say he's done. Like, he's legit done. And he can't win the title. This is just going to be a one and done. And lo and behold, man, the ending of this match is pretty wild, too. Like, the way that John Laurinaitis gets absolutely punched in the face by John Cena, which is great.
Yeah.
And then Vince McMahon tries to pull the old Montreal screw job, tries to ring the bell, you son of a bitch, and tries to do it twice. But just the way everything in this match is done, even if somebody that didn't watch it at the time and wasn't really flowing with that storyline, I love the hell out of this match. It's excellent.
Yeah, and you know, the match goes back and forth. You don't know which way it's going to go, and you're right to say that, Aaron. The idea of the title, the idea of the contract, and obviously they're fighting for the title, but the idea of the contract hangs, it's almost like the contract is, the title rather, or the contract is hanging above, it's almost like a ladder match, a proverbial ladder match, and then whoever pulls the contract down takes the title and gets out of here, and it seems that way throughout, and they don't stop mentioning Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, Booker T. It's a very interesting trio that they choose to call the match as well, Aaron. We should talk about that. Cole constantly undercutting CM Punk, you know, saying that he's ungrateful, saying that, you know, there's no bigger defender of CM Punk than me, but he's doing the wrong, he's making a mistake here. Lawler making jokes about the fact that he'll be unemployed and people like paychecks and blah blah blah, you know, the working man's point of view. And then you have Booker kind of saying, well, these people needed a voice. And, you know, I don't agree with what he's doing, but they needed a voice. You know, and there's some weird banter too about the title, and Cole feeling himself a little bit. You know, there are times where I wonder how people don't knock Cole the F out with some of his comments randomly in the middle of matches, because he said to Booker, because Booker says initially, like near the about 20 minute mark of the match, he's like, you know, this is about the title. This is about the title. And Cole's like, oh, really? Is it? And he's like, dude, I would knock you the F out if we weren't calling a match right now. And then Booker goes into how much the title means to him. And listen, this is a black wrestler talking about the fact that he never got a shot at that title, or never won that title, rather. I'm sure he had shots, but he never won that title. So there's a little bit of respect that you have to have, historical perspective you have to have in that moment, that Cole doesn't have. And then he just offhandedly mentions to Jerry, when he starts to talk, you didn't win the title either. And then Jerry goes, yeah, and then it's just like, hey, what are you doing, you moron? And so throughout, you get this, the announce team feels off kilter throughout the match. I think they still do a great job calling the match. Yeah. They just feel off kilter. And that's kind of energy the whole night had. No one knew what to expect. So everyone is afraid about what might happen. If Cena wins, we riot. But if Punk wins, holy shit, Punk won? There's so much involved in that just kind of permeates the atmosphere when you're watching this match and listening to the announcers.
Well, I'm going to have to save Michael Cole here, because I think I think for Michael Cole's sake, I believe he was still doing his heel announcer storyline shtick.
Oh, was he in the middle of that?
Still? I think I think he was just being a heel announcer. But
gotcha.
It did perk my ears up when I was watching it, when Jerry Lawler said like CM Punk might need a stimulus to get himself back together. It's like, oh boy, like that is unfortunately apropos for this moment as well. And the unemployment jokes, I was like, oh God,
yeah.
I don't know why I picked this match now.
Like, yeah, they're like, you can go make pizza down the street or something. I was like, what?
Yeah, I was like, oh my God. Like,
what's wrong with you?
Is somehow very fitting to what's going on in America right now. But yeah, like you said, Booker T on the, Booker T on commentary is very hit or miss for me. Sometimes I love him. Sometimes I can't stand him. And I think when he does the WWE backstage kind of stuff, he's great. He's excellent. Yeah. Like talking to people and stuff like that. Sometimes on commentary, not my deal.
Yeah.
But But nobody can beat Jerry and the King either, so I don't know. Or JR and the King, not Jerry and the King. But, yeah, so, I mean, this announcing team is fine. I've never been a Michael Cole fan. I'm Pettengill over Michael Cole.
Todd Pettengill.
I'm big Todd Pettengill guy. Over Pettengill Michael Mark. Cole. Dude, he's excellent. He's he's a WWE mainstay, and he kind of looks like my aunt. Just want to throw that out there for Todd Pettengill. But,
you're a Pettengill stan. I didn't even know those existed. Hey, all right, go ahead.
Hey, I'm just telling you. Like, he's excellent. He should be a Hall of Famer, for God's sake.
Oh my God, you're out of control, dude.
But the way that the submissions are set up in this match as well, like Punk going for the Anaconda Vice, like right from the jump, and then John Cena going for the STF, or as they called it, the STFU back in the day. Right. Just the stuff they were doing there, because John Cena was winning a lot with that move. So when he got it on Punk, like, you can hear the crowd like, oh God, like, no. Like, could you imagine Vince McMahon having the guts? Well, that doesn't – yeah, he has the guts. Yeah. To have CM Punk lose in Chicago that way. Like, I could see it. I could see it happening. But
I could, but I also couldn't see Punk going along with it. There's – I mean, listen, on the front of the mic – I mean, sorry, on the front of the back – God damn it. When he's out there – there we go. And he's out there on the mic. That is an extension of who Punk is in real life. Like, for sure. I met Punk at Collider. He was really nice dude. Really nice dude. And that interview was great that Christian did with him. Or was it Roxy? I can't remember who did with him. But like, he was really like straightforward and honest. And everybody had warned us. No lie. Everybody warned us before he came through the door that he was going to be cantankerous. He was going to be tough to deal with. Blah, blah, blah. Couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been nicer. But that doesn't mean he still doesn't believe what he believes. And he has that. And he talks about it in the interview. If you go back and watch that interview, he talks about it. He's really honest about where he was and what was going on with that whole situation, what he was trying to do. So in the back, there's no way he's not that rambunctious either and pushing back. And he's always had this very strong ego about himself. It rubs people the wrong way because not everyone has ego. And everyone is like, oh, I'm just happy to get a paycheck. I'm just happy to be here. You know, the ones that stand out, the ones that are like different, they're unusual. They're willing to take the risks to be fired or to be seen differently because the herd rarely stands out. Yes, you get a consistent paycheck, but you rarely stand out. It's the different ones that, you know, kind of push the boundaries or test the limits that really stand out and become memorable, become legacies. And Punk, and that's why people still cheer for CM Punk 6 years later. People still want him to come back. When he shows up on backstage, people lose their minds when he showed up on backstage, not realizing that backstage is a Fox thing and WWE is a separate thing. But at the time, people went crazy thinking he was back, but he wasn't. He was back to do that. You know, and so there's interesting things that go on with Punk, but there's no way he would have taken that loss to Cena in that way. It just would have destroyed everything he was trying to do in that whole promo. I'm sorry, the whole campaign building up to that match.
Well, the way that it was going with the Straight Edge Society and all that other stuff, I mean, it kind of looked like it was going that way, which I guess is what makes it that much better when it doesn't happen. I mean, like I said, Vince McMahon tries to screw him over in the end. Punk hits the GTS, 1, 2, 3. He's the world. He's a WWE champion.
Yeah.
And he's not under contract. He gets the belt. Vince McMahon gets on the mic, says, cut his music. We got to have Alberto Del Rio out here, I hated saying his name just now, but we got to have him out here. He's got to cash in. So he comes out there and he punches Alberto. God, I said it again. Punches that guy in the face, knocks him down. And then CM Punk leaves with the title. And one of the most famous pictures in WWE history is him blowing that kiss to Vince McMahon. Like, it's so good.
Yeah,
and then that's how it ends. CM Punk in that's how the pay per view ends. CM Punk at the top of wherever they play, the United Center, I guess is where that would be, if it's called that anymore. And he would he has the belt. And it's funny to note that when he won the title, when CM Punk went home, he put the WWE Championship in his refrigerator. That's where it sat, in his refrigerator.
That's the last place you look for it, is the refrigerator.
I guess if Vince McMahon wanted it back, I guess, you'd have to go through the refrigerator to get that. But, it's just a CM Punk thing. Like, of course he's going to put it in the fridge. He's CM freaking Punk.
I love the unusual nature of Punk. All right, we got about 35 of you all watching in here. You know, it was kind of impromptu live show, so I apologize. I should have hyped it up a little bit more, given a 24-hour notice. But I appreciate the 37 of you all in here. Got 27 likes already. We got the super chats up. We got the stream lives up. I really want to hit that $100 mark. Help us hit that $100 mark. Trying to have some fundraising goals for every one of the episodes I do now in the Outlaw Nation. So help us hit that. Send in some stream labs. Send in super chats. Ask us anything you want. Huh?
I think there's a few in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you want to come in live, send in a $20 super chat. I'll bring you in live to ask the question to us. So there you go. Send in five $20 super chats. We've hit the $100 mark, or five $20 Streamlabs. We've hit the $100 mark. I'll have you come in live and read it. So this one's from Larry Lee. He said, guys, hit that like button. Shout out to the awesome Rook. Oh, thank you, Larry.
Am I not awesome? Okay. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Larry. Ferris Mathot. Oh, my God. I haven't seen Ferris in for a long time. He said that pop was similar to Brett at Canadian Stampede. Yeah, big deal. Big deal.
That was quite a partial crowd as well, of course, for the Hearts. And the pop afterwards in that match is just as big as it was at the start because they end up winning the match. We're going to talk about Canadian Stampede at some point. It's on my list for sure.
That's awesome. That's all. Good to see you, Ferris. Come on back to the Outlaw Nation, Ferris. Where have you been? Where have you been, my man? I miss you.
J-Dog corrected me down there. I see it says Allstate Arena is what it's called now. So, okay, yeah, Allstate, not the United Center anymore. Sorry, I have too much Chicago Bulls lately. I've been thinking about the United Center. Too much of the last dance or whatever.
The last dance. On. That's where it's at, my man. The last dance. That's where everything is happening. All right, we'll keep the Streamlabs. We'll keep the Super Chats open. Come on, hit that goal. Give me some love. Give us some love here. You know, we love talking about this stuff. Yeah, the match ends. He walks away. He gets the belt, but of course, you know, I think Triple H came out and made some statement or something right afterwards and that they were still negotiating with Punk. And then it was announced. Wasn't he off TV for like a week or two and then he came back?
A couple weeks, yeah. He's off TV for a couple weeks. They had this tournament. It comes down to Rey Mysterio and The Miz. And Rey Mysterio becomes your new WWE champion. But hey, guess what? John Cena gets a title shot out of nowhere. Yeah, of course. Beats Rey Mysterio, becomes WWE champion again. And then there's CM Punk who's the actual champion. They both raise the belts with each other. That's right. When Cult of Personality debuts as his theme song because no one knew it was going to be him until he comes and steps out. Huge pop, of course. So then we get John Cena versus CM Punk yet again at SummerSlam 2011. The winner would be the undisputed champion. CM Punk wins, but due to Kevin Nash's old ass interference, he jackknifes CM Punk, and out comes that guy again to cash it. I'm saying that guy because of the allegations that have been waged against him this week. I am not a fan of this guy ever anyway, so screw him. Okay. But so he cashes in, becomes the champion, which pretty much undercut that entire run of CM Punk at the moment.
Yeah.
And then I think WWE realized, oh God, we screwed up big time.
Yeah.
So at the 2011 Survivor Series, Punk would go back and beat Alberto. I said it. Well, fuck it. He would beat ADR.
You can say his name.
Okay. I hate him. I hate him.
That's fine, but you still got to say his name.
He would beat Alberto, become WWE champion, and then would hold it for that record 434 days. It was the summer of Punk. It was, you know, quite a run after that. You know, he had those matches with Ryback, which took years off of his career and life, that he said. But, you know, he would lose it to The Rock at Royal Rumble 2013.
I remember that.
And then as it goes, you know, the next year at the Royal Rumble 2014, the day after, CM Punk's gone.
Yeah.
He's left us all and hasn't really come back since. He did two UFC fights. He was 0-2 in the UFC. I give him great kudos for giving it a shot because a lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah,
true. Didn't go that way. But now he's back on WWE backstage doing that kind of stuff. Will he wrestle again? I don't know.
Yeah.
There was those talks with AEW where they, I guess, like try to negotiate over text, and CM Punk was like, why would you text me to try to sign me? Why would you call? So I guess that's just a Young Bucks thing, but I mean, it remains to be seen if he's going to come back. A lot of people think he's the SmackDown hacker, that storyline they'd be doing.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, man. It would be cool. It would be cool to see him again. Right. I don't know where he would fit in right now. I mean, WWE's kind of in a state of flux right now, especially with no people. Yeah. I can't imagine CM Punk coming back to just absolutely nobody. So, I mean, I don't know.
It would be weird. I agree. It would be a little bit strange to have him come back in that. And I think now when the product is so down, I don't think this is the time for him to come back. You know, when the ratings aren't great, and the Fox deal is great for them, but you know, coincidentally, as soon as the Fox deal happens, the ratings tanked even more because the wrestling fans can sense when you're trying to make certain people win to try to keep merch sales up versus storyline. And so people see that as soon as they sense that, the hardcore people who come to you every week to enjoy your stuff, they're going to turn away. They're going to turn away. They're not going to come in the same numbers to watch it on TV. And that's part of the problem. And I don't think CM Punk should walk into a situation like this. This is not where you walk in. You walk in when it's at its nadir, when it's at its top. Yeah. And then you come in to mess with one of their main guys. That's how you do this thing. Jared Ferris sent in another super chat, said that Rock stuff was bull jive. You can say bullshit there, Ferris.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah, it was bullshit. You're right. Mm-hmm. The Raw 1000 where CM Punk hit the Rock with the GTS, effectively turning him heel when he was on such a good face run.
Yeah, yeah.
Just another, damn, man. Like, they just couldn't figure out CM Punk. No. And all they had to do was essentially just let it run.
Yeah.
Just let it run, man. No, he's not the SmackDown hacker. He's not the SmackDown hacker. He's going to be in prison for like 20 years. So just... Salvador, just forget about it. He's going to be in prison. Maybe he can hack something in prison, the prick.
Well, we got our first $20 stream lab. Got to give it up. Ferris, thank you. He said, I think you're awesome, Aaron. I think you are awesome, Aaron. Thank there you. You go.
$20 you for that? Love. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's a $20. All right, we need four more of those. Come on, send them in. If you want to come in, I'm putting the link right now. As soon as you do, Ferris, if you wanted to come in and ask a question, you can. Here's the link to come in live. Here's the link to come in live. If you want to come in live, just look right there under my thing. Give the $20 super chat or $20 stream live, and I'll bring you in live. You can ask your question live, and Aaron and I will answer it for you. Yeah, and Ferris put in another one. He said, it wouldn't let me say it, that word.
We'll say it for you, brother. We'll say it for you.
Bull hockey. There you go.
Yeah, sure.
He's a terrible dude. He's absolutely a terrible dude. So, agreed. But all right, let's move on to, are we done here? Are we done with that match?
Yeah. We're done. This is something we're trying to call this like the match of the week, like a place we'll go back in time and look at it, because we try to make this an hour show. Sometimes we can't stretch it that far. It's just, and I'd rather talk about other things that are going on that people want to talk about, AEW, NXT, stuff like that.
Right.
We're done with this for right now, but go back and watch it. Money in the Bank 2011.
Exactly. Let's see. Did we get some from J-Dog? J-Dog, you can't come in unless you donated. You can't come in unless you donated the $20. You know what I just said.
Come on, J-Dog.
Come on, J-Dog.
I see a question down here. I know it's not on the stream live, but I see a question down here from Dalstar. S. Dalstar said, what's your guys' favorite Royal Rumble? That'd be Ric Flair in 1993, I believe it was. We said that was our first episode.
It was our first episode, so I'd have to agree with you.
Yeah, it's an excellent Royal Rumble.
Yeah. I think that's a good one as well. Let me see. One more check through the Streamlabs and before we move on to our next topic then. Should we jump into the Becky Lynch story?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that.
Let's do it.
So Becky Lynch comes out on Monday. It's like the big announcement. It's the first thing on the show. Is 92. Thank you, Dowser. Becky Lynch comes out. She's doing, it's like, she's got a big announcement. She comes out with the Money in the Bank briefcase. Yeah. First of all, why did Asuka let it out of her sight? That was the first thing I thought of. And she comes out with this announcement. Number one, it's either one of two things. Number one, she's hurt, or number two, she's pregnant. Because that's unfortunately, or I guess fortunately, that is one of two things that can happen in wrestling when you're female that would cause you to step away. But out comes Asuka. And, she's like, why do you have my money in the bank? She's going all crazy. Right. And then Becky Lynch unlocks it and says, you don't realize that it wasn't just money in the bank. It was for the Raw Women's Championship. She said, you go be a warrior. I'll go be a mother. And it was just like, oh, God. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it felt like such a genuine moment. I'm sure that Asuka, she had to know.
Of course she knew.
She had to know beforehand, but it felt like she didn't.
Right.
Like, she may just be like an excellent actress and I don't realize it, but just the emotion between the two and the emotion on Becky Lynch's face was like, you could tell, obviously, she's overjoyed to be a mother and she's ready to start that part of her life. But at the same time, it's like she's on this hell of a run where she's been, Raw Women's Champion for over a year. This is all she wanted. She worked her ass off to get there and to be seen and do all this stuff. Became the man. She's on Billions doing all this stuff.
Right.
And now she's going to have to walk away for a year probably or so if she wants to come back at all, which she may not. And I think that she did a good job acknowledging that as well. Like, I don't know what's in the cards for me. Maybe I'll be gone forever. Maybe I'll be gone for a year. Who knows? Yeah. But what do you think? And that damn Seth Rollins, I swear. assuming they were going out. I don't want to put like a firm on it. Like, I'm assuming it's Seth Rollins.
I think you can put a firm on it, but I like, I like the meme, or like the, somebody put the tweet up. Maybe you retweeted it. It was like, he knocked out Sting. He knocked out,
Finn Balor.
Finn Balor. And then he's knocking out Becky. Someone needs to stop the scourge of Seth Rollins. That is brilliant. Look, these, you know, when they first became a couple, people were just like, oh, this is just the top two people at the time getting together, blah, blah, blah. But it seems to be a really genuine connection between them. The posts are very sweet. They don't look like they belong together, but weird. But yeah, they look a little weird together. But that being said, certainly chemistry is chemistry. They must feel the chemistry to be having a child. They're not married, so they're having the child. And they're you're right, exactly. It's not the 1890s, for God's sakes. But I'm just saying, that's, you know, when WWE works really hard to appeal to the red state people and come off as this family entertainment, yeah, it's an interesting situation with Becky and Seth doing this, right? So I thought this speech was fine. It bordered, once again, she's become John Cena, which breaks my heart. It's a lot of cheesiness, a lot of like hitting what she needs to say, all the nice things, even the "you go be a warrior, I'll go be a mother" thing, that felt a little cheesy, like Cena would say something like that. And so whatever badassery that was there for Becky, I think they've ultimately beat it out of her by letting her win all these matches for so long. You just don't longer feel like she's a badass. You feel like she's chosen by the company. She's become, when she went from the rebel, and now she feels corporate. And that's, you never wanted that for Becky. But she is what she is. And all kudos to her for turning it around, because the other option was her being a jobber and staying a mid-carder for the rest of her life. So she did what she needed to do. She got into a great position for herself, and God love her. Now, I don't think we're ever going to see her in a wrestling ring again. That's my honest
truth. Whoa, okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's my honest truth. I think she is going to have the – look, people put this in a number of articles. She studied to be an actress. She is a trained actress.
And right now,
what she did on Billions was basically Becky Lynch, so I don't count that. But she is a trained actress. And there were rumors. You mentioned one or two reasons that she would be leaving. The other rumor that was floated persistently was that she was going to go be part of the Marvel Universe. There were rumors that she had taken a role in the Marvel, in the MCU. They weren't going to specify what, but there were rumors that she might be leaving the WWE to be a part of the Marvel Universe. Some people rumored She-Hulk. Some people said other things. Who knows? I don't know if it's possible. I'd like to see more from Becky before I say that. But yes, that's... that to me, in the end, I wasn't that impressed with the promo, but I think it's great that she's moving on. But I believe we're never going to see her in a wrestling ring again. I think she's going to have the baby, take care of the baby for a while, and then start taking acting jobs. And she's going to pull the Cena, pull the Batista, pull the Rock, and she's going to move her way out of the WWE. She's done everything that she can possibly do. If she sticks around longer, she becomes Cena for the rest of the few years. Why not go and see if there's something while you're in your early 30s, see if there's something happening for you acting wise that can bring you millions without costing your body breaking down later on in life as a woman, you know?
Sure. I 100% get that. Real quick, just something else, meme that just absolutely slayed me, and I don't endorse it because it's really mean, was that, wow, Becky Lynch beat Ronda Rousey again. And I was just like, wow, it's fucked up. But anyway, woo! I think the one thing, if there was one thing, I knew that'd get you. Damn. If there was one thing that Becky Lynch could do that I haven't seen her do, is that one-on-one match with Ronda. I think that is that is what I want, man. Like, I really, it was going the right way for that WrestleMania main event. And I don't know what happened where they thought, like, well, if we don't put Charlotte in there, it's just not going to be the same.
Right.
If we don't, can we really fully rely on Becky to draw this as the main event? Do we need something better? I think her versus Ronda Rousey in a main event somewhere, somehow, whether it be WrestleMania, Survivor Series, whatever, as long as it's the main event, I think that's like the last thing that she would have to do, unless she wants to go back to NXT and tangle with Rhea Ripley or tangle with Candice LeRae or somebody like that, just for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think she'd want to do that, but, you know, motherhood changes people. And that's totally understandable. Like, you bond with your child, you want to stay with your child. There's plenty of people that I've worked with that have had children and not come back to work.
Yeah.
And left lucrative jobs to stay at home and be a mother. And that's totally great. Good on you.
Yeah.
But something else though, is that it can be done. Like Becky Lynch can come back as a part-timer. We've seen people wrestle. We've seen Maryse, who wrestled and has had two children. And we've seen Brie Bella do it. We've seen Maria Kanellis do it. Now those three ladies are not on the same level as Becky Lynch by far, but at least in the case of Maryse, she wasn't a top tier feud. So it can be done. It's just a matter of she wants to do that still. So I think when she hung up the jacket, that lends a little more credence to what you're saying about her never coming back.
I think we're never going to see her again in wrestling. If we do, Aaron, if we do, I think it'll be like you said, at a WrestleMania, and it'll be like where they tried to go the Undertaker out of retirement to fight. I think it's that. I think it's going to be Ronda, like, you know, hassling Becky, showing up at the daycare, messing with her breast pumps. Like, it's going to be something where Ronda makes this happen. And so the storyline is powerful that Ronda is bringing Becky back and she shows up at WrestleMania. And that pop, when Becky's been out for a year and Becky comes back at WrestleMania for a pop against Ronda, will be insane. Absolutely insane. And once again, she'll be back to being the underdog, back to being the rebel against the chosen champion, which Ronda clearly legitimately was, you know.
If you're going to pick a new champion, Asuka's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I agree. Asuka's great. Let's bring in Ferris. Ferris, you know, send in a $20 Streamlabs. Thank you, Ferris. Good to see you. Buddy. Where the fuck have you been, man? I haven't seen you in forever. Was it something I said?
Nah, John. I don't get easily offended. So it's all right, man. It's been rough out of here. That's all I gotta say. It's been rough out of here. Yeah. Yeah, man. My question is going back to what John just said. He said how, like, Becky was like the rebel and we all loved her, that she became corporate. But like, how do we like keep them from becoming corporate? You know what I mean? Cause like, you know, because like Stone Cold, like even when they made him, like they made him heel, I guess, at WrestleMania 18? 18.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, but no one really was like, yeah, we hate Stone Cold. We're like, no.
We accept him.
No.
Right.
I'm not going to boo that. No, I'm not going to boo him. It's not going to happen. No, like, and they had to make him, like, heated, so he started beating up announcers, but they were like, yeah, he's beating up Michael Cole, yeah! But then, like, so, like, how do you keep other wrestlers from not, like, becoming corporate, like that?
It's a good question, man. I think with Stone Cold, he's one of those guys, and The Rock, too. Those two guys are just impervious from going to corp. Once they cross that line, they, no matter how much they tried to make them heels, like that Hollywood Rock when he came, that was a terrible decision. But when they tried to bring them back into that place, it doesn't work because it doesn't feel natural, right? I think once Becky changed up her gear and got all cleaner and got all this kind of lean, clean machine, that's when it started to slide into that corporate thing. Austin always carried the shorts, no matter what, heel or face. The shirts, it's always been the same deal. So you can feel that he, like, if he started wearing leather pants to the ring or started wearing a different look, you know.
Did he wear a suit at once? He was,
no, he just wore a tie. And he wore a tie and a jacket.
He wore a suit.
Oh, did he?
I remember him wearing a suit.
So I don't remember that.
Right. It was really weird to me. I was like, Stone Cold don't look good in no suit.
He still wore his hat, though. He still wore the hat.
Yeah. And like his tie was kind of crooked. So I'm like,
yeah.
That dude's never worn a suit in his life, much like
exactly.
I don't wear suits. No. That's not my deal. I think what you have to do in a situation like that is you got Becky, you don't want her to go corporate. You got to do little things. Like when she's tagging with Charlotte or whoever, like when they just had like a grueling match, don't have them hug. Don't have them shake hands. Like she should be pushing her in the face. Like I didn't like that. Like when when Charlotte and Becky had this big long rivalry where they're calling each other bitches and they're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
She should just not be her friend. Like they should see each other in the hallway and just be like, that's it. Like,
Rock and Cena leading up to WrestleMania at Survivor Series.
Right.
They weren't, we're just tagging against the Miz and R-Truth.
Yeah. It's like, we got to do this.
Yeah. We got to do this. We're not friends. Oh yeah. Yeah. I see that.
That's how you keep it fresh. And then you also, though it's kind of hard to do this in a corporate environment where you're trying to make money and merchandise, but God damn, man, like you don't have to make every single piece of merchandise for Becky Lynch. Like she doesn't need a lunchbox. She doesn't need a license plate. I don't need a, the man like coffee mug. I don't need that shit. Like just give me two t-shirts that says the man, and now they have one that says the mom with whatever.
Of course they do.
But I mean, like, it's that too. Like, it just overwhelms you. Like, do you know how many Roman Reigns t-shirts are on WWE Shop? Like, a million.
Right.
And it's the same thing that happened to Ronda Rousey too. Like, they try to make her this badass, and they're like, here's 15,000 Ronda Rousey on. It's like, dude, well, Aaron, don't buy this crap.
Aaron, you know, it's nowadays heels have shirts.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens was one of the biggest merch sellers there was when he was a heel.
Yeah, exactly, which throws me off because this is what I like about Eddie Guerrero. I remember Eddie Guerrero when he was heel. He was like, don't sell my shirt. I don't like people. Why would I want them to buy my shirt? I don't like them. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, shit, Eddie, yeah, cool. Yeah.
CM Punk said the same thing. He said he doesn't understand why they're making merch for me when I'm a heel. I don't get it.
Exactly. Honestly, back to that, I think the Straight Edge Society was the biggest biggest untapped thing
for sure,
because they were legitimately like, people were legitimately like they hated his guts.
Yeah,
because he kept pointing it, because at these events most dudes are like drinking beer. He's like you disgusting, despicable heathens with, and he's like, he's jabbing at them like personally, like he's like, what you consume is garbage just like you. And I was like, oh shit.
I mean, we've talked about it on the Schmodown with Christian and I. Like, if I go heel one more time, it's going to be brutal. I mean, brutal.
You have to, because the Outlaw, like, nowadays isn't really heel.
You're Becky Lynch.
No, yeah, I'm a tweener. I'm a tweener.
You're tweener.
I'm
like Stone Cold. I'm Stone Cold. You're John Roca. You're John Roca. Like, oh, it's
right,
John.
Right. Yeah.
So you need to be like a piece of shit. That's what you need to be. You need to be like an absolute piece of garbage.
Well,
we've been talking about it.
Yeah, trust
me. Like, if you guys lost to corruption, you needed to be a piece of garbage. You know how you piece of garbage? You shove Damn Roll down a trash can. That's what you do. That's how you get people mad at you. You shove Dan Merle.
Shannon and you push her down.
I push Dan Merle off the stage.
Exactly. And break his leg. Exactly.
Don't push Shannon. Don't.
Like, you know how many people love Dan Merle? If you did that to Dan Merle, people would be like, John Roca, you absolute.
It would be brilliant. Dude, I never thought about it with Dan. Exactly.
Then people would think that Andrew Guy really is his kid. That's where he got it from.
Pushing Dan Merle off the stage. I never thought of that. I can't do that. I love Danny too much. There's no way.
You have to tackle Dan Merle.
Is there a waiver for physicality in the Schmodown? I never
asked. Yeah, we all signed
should
it.
Have.
We all signed it. Trust
okay,
me.
I thought
all
so. Signed I thought it. So.
Yeah, man.
All right. Good stuff, Ferris. Great talking to you, man. Keep coming back, bro. I miss you. I haven't seen you in a while. Please.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I got to go, shoot my podcast at 5 o'clock if y'all want to join.
Shout it out, man.
Right on, man. Okay.
I'm at the Let's Get Ready podcast on the Guideline Entertainment Network. Today we're doing a special bracket breakdown of the Schmodown brackets that came out the past 2 days. We're gonna do predictions and see who wins. We're gonna banter. It's me, Shug, and Justin.
So have they changed the brackets at all or no?
They switched up the IG bracket. They moved Emily Rose Jacobson and Janine the Machine.
Goddamn right. They were trying to screw us. Goddamn right.
No, but like, how did they do the first bracket in the first place? Well, no, this strong style. Sorry, this strong.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all have a nice night. If y'all want to come see y'all at 5 o'clock, I'll tweet it out if y'all want it, or Shug will tweet it out.
All right. Sounds good, man. Appreciate seeing you, Ferris.
Nice night.
Take care, brother. Ferris, I love that guy, man. I love busting balls with him. I thought I had said something wrong to him because I haven't seen him on the shows in some time. Like, he used to come on the sports show as well. So, and then he removed himself from my Patreon, and I was like, oh no, was there something I said? Because I know he's been on other people's shows. So I was worried that maybe I did some, but like he said, maybe times are tough and he's making his decisions how he makes his decisions. You got to respect that. But that's the kind of thing you get if you're going to donate a $20 level. You can come in and talk to us live here on Strong Style. All right. Well, we'll see what happens with Becky Lynch. We'll see if she like ever comes back. I'm noting it now on this day, on May 13th. I said it at 4:15 that she's never coming back to wrestle again as a full-time wrestler. So I don't think we're ever going to see her in the ring as a full-time wrestler ever again. I think she wants to do other things with her career and her life.
I guess we'll have to wait and see as the business goes.
We'll see. All right. For those of you who are watching right now, we're at 48. We're at 48 of you watching. We only have 30 likes. Swing that cursor button. Hit the like button on this video. Give us some love. And let's move on to our next story here. And that's the review from Dark Side of the Ring. Dude, let's talk about this. UWF, talk to me.
excellent. An excellent episode. My favorite part of this entire episode, besides the hookers and the blow, which is just amazing, is that Herb, what was his name? Herb Abrams. He made the UWF Television Championship to fold up to say FU. That's amazing. Because it said UWF on one side, UWF on the other, and they're mirrored, and it said FU, and he did it because he hated Vince McMahon.
Yes, that's
incredible. That's so petty. I love that kind of stuff. And then this whole story, I knew nothing about this.
Yeah,
I thought when they were talking about the UWF, they were talking about the other UWF that they mentioned. Like, Herb Abrams just stole the name because they didn't trademark it, which is amazing. But that's what I thought they were talking about. And then they were talking about this guy. It's like, yeah, he was covered in Vaseline. He had cocaine all over him. It's like, what is this nonsense? And they were talking about like how he would write checks to people and they would bounce. But then he had like millions of dollars in an account and then nothing in another account. It's like, what is this guy doing? But if you could write like like you're sitting in a writer's room, you're like, okay, well, what's a crazy thing that would happen in sports? I don't know. A guy covered in Vaseline and cocaine swings a bat at a bunch of hookers. Okay, sure. That sounds like something that would never happen. And then it did.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy, Aaron, to think about. And also, you know what struck me though by the end? He really did affect these people's lives. So many of these wrestlers cried or were sad or even remembered him with fondness, even though he bounced checks, even though they couldn't sell out pay-per-views to save their lives, even though they couldn't make any money, they still kept coming back to wrestle for him, kept coming back to be a part of him. And I know it's the 80s where you couldn't necessarily have agents and demand all this kind of stuff. It's the 80s, it's a different time, but still people could walk away from you. People could decide not to wrestle for you, but for whatever reason, they kept coming back and helping him out and putting on these events and having faith in him and dealing with the insanity of this guy naked in oil, covered in talcum baby powder with cocaine, mounds of like Scarface level mounds of cocaine on two separate tabletops or two separate coffee tables, just going insane about it. And it was shocking to see how many of them cried, because I have a feeling, I'm not trying to say anything assholeish or mean, I have a feeling that beyond Vince's family, not many people are going to cry when Vince passes. I just think there's a difference. You know, Vince was always in power, always on top of the situation, always having the money, always in control. It's different with someone like Herb, who's a small guy, diminutive guy, 5 foot guy. Immediately, you feel a little bit of sympathy for him. But then you see all the colossal fuck ups. But when he would mess up and he'd ask for forgiveness and he'd feel terrible about it, they always took him back. It was incredible to see this, Aaron.
Yeah, I think that Herb might have had what we call little man syndrome. And that is, he's a small guy that liked to talk big and act big and then had to compensate for not being as big as other people. Because when you're hanging out with people like Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey, who are like 6'11" or however tall they are, you got to overcompensate. You got to be running around naked in your cowboy boots with your truckload of blow. Just the thing that's crazy to me is like, they were talking about how like fast, like his heart would pump and like stuff like that. Like his heart gave out after all the cocaine. You know, I drank 2 Mountain Dew Amps one time back to back, which was very stupid. Don't ever do that. In a very short period, I thought I was going to die. So I can't imagine like having a mountain of cocaine, like to the point where that, like you are so messed up chasing a hooker with, I shouldn't say hooker, but you know, for this, I'll say hooker.
A lady of the night.
You're chasing a lady of the night with a baseball bat for whatever reason. She stole your money. She stole your blow or whatever. And then your heart just gives out and you're just dead. Like that's all she wrote. Right. And the best part about this episode, besides like all the people saying how much they loved him and stuff like that, which caught me off guard, he might still be alive.
This idea, he might have faked his own death. And I love Foley at the end. There's no way he would stay quiet. There's no way he wouldn't tell people that he did it. And I love they asked him, where would Herb be now if he was alive? And he said, jail.
He'd
be in jail. Yeah. But then he followed up by saying, and I'd be visiting him every week. And then see that. That tells you that it's amazing to me the kind of love that people have for this man watching the thing. I can't get past it, because most people who disappoint you or let you down, you just kind of walk away from them because it's a toxic situation. Right. But for whatever reason, the guy was his own worst enemy. That was the thing. He wasn't trying to necessarily intentionally hurt these people. He just was terrible with money. He wanted to be a wrestler himself, which is why he put himself in the storylines. He just loved the business that much. But he seemed to forget that it's a business and not just his personal playground. And that's where the things seem to be, the problems seem to arise financially for him and, bouncing those checks. But, watching them cry for him, man, just powerful stuff.
I think a better success story of what Herb Abrams could have been is Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
When you look at ECW, Paul Heyman, smaller guy, yep. Very, very rebel. Producer guy would not necessarily put himself in the storyline unless he absolutely had to get a story over. Very similar in that. I don't know if Paul Heyman ever chased a hooker around with a baseball bat. Wouldn't surprise me if he did. But I'm just saying, like, that's what it reminded me of. I felt like I was watching a biography of, like, a young Paul Heyman coming yeah. through. But just with crazy Looney Tunes amount of craziness going on. And, like, these, like, you'll hear it, like, in ECW, like, Paul Heyman bounced checks to people all the time.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman did shady underpinnings, but I guarantee you talk to those ECW guys, they all love Paul Heyman.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy how, like, somebody like that, like, even at their worst time, people can still grab on. It's like the boss that you love to hate.
Yeah.
You just like, I'm just so loyal to him. I can't hate him.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the currency, right? It's not just, and it's something Ryan Satt and I always, and I'll bring it up again, we always went around and around about this on our recap shows. The currency is not just money in life. Currency is being appreciated, being respected, being supported, being believed in. That can go a longer way than a $500 paycheck or a $1,000 paycheck in life. Because many people can pay their bills, and how many of those people feel legitimately loved or supported or believed in by their bosses at the jobs they've chosen to give their lives to? And the thing is here, it felt like a lot of these wrestlers, they would take the bounce checks because in exchange, they were working for a guy who really loved them and supported them and wanted to put them in the best position. He just wasn't smart enough to do so, but they appreciated the fact that he would try. You know, like when that Vegas thing was such a debacle, but look at the list of wrestlers who are walking through those curtains.
A lot of damn good talent.
Yeah, they're legendary, right? Someone put a comment here and said, what about Foley claiming UWF in 1990 had more depth than the WWF at that time? And see, that tells you.
That's foolish. That's foolish to say that, Mick Foley. How dare you? It's foolish.
Yeah. I mean, he would know better than us, I think. He was there. So it's just like you get that vibe from him overall. And that's the thing. You watch this, and it's a terrible situation too, because this is what I find fascinating about pro wrestling and the history of pro wrestling. Two or three federations really had a chance to knock Vince off his stoop. And certainly WCW was the closest that ever came. But certainly at the beginning, UWF could have done it. UWF had Andre. They signed Andre the Giant, for God's sakes.
That was crazy.
Right? If they'd had enough money, they could have kept it. But obviously Andre played it and got his money from Vince. But that was that showed you that Vince has been weak at times throughout the years. Now it's almost impossible to knock Vince off the pedestal. And who knows how much longer he's going to be around. But at the beginning stages in the 80s and 90s, it certainly was possible to sink the WWE and the WWF more than people think. And that's what I was taken away from this is if I had the money that Herb had, I'd know exactly how to run this thing. I'd know exactly how to get the right people involved and hopefully engender their loyalty because I would pay their checks and support them. And that's what I thought to myself, man, if I had that kind of money, I wanted to start a federation. I knew exactly what to do and how to go at Vince, you know? And so it's weird to have people pop up who have these opportunities, but then can't really handle the mental war that you have to go through to beat a Vince McMahon. Both Bischoff and Herb, it was like they both fell apart eventually. You know, Vince is such a strong mental warrior. You may get the advantage for a little bit, but he plays the long game. And no one's been able to knock him off the pedestal yet because he plays the long game so well.
Something else, they didn't mention this in the documentary. This is something I found out in some independent research. But the UWF had, you know, they had TV, so they would do a weekly show.
Right.
And did you know that eight of their first 9 main events on their show ended in a double count out, a disqualification, had no conclusive ending because so many of the wrestlers had such egos, like, oh, I was this guy in WWF at the time, blah, blah, blah. They didn't want to lose to each other.
Right.
So it's like, damn, man, like now we've got a WCW problem on our hands. Right. Like, right, it's right. Just, it was never going to work for Herb. Like, he just seemed like he wanted to be everybody's buddy.
Yep.
And he just never wanted to be the guy that was going to put the hammer down. He, you know, he'll cut you a check for writing, for, you know, rigging up the lights, but he's just, it's just not going to work, man. Yeah. It's just, at the end of the day, it's not going to work because at some point you have to be a businessman. Yeah. That's the hardest part of owning your own business, is you got to make those hard decisions. And like you said, it's just, he wasn't mentally, you know, strong enough to make those decisions in the end. And that's what really sunk the UWF.
Yeah. But like Aaron said earlier, this is one of the strongest episodes of the season.
Very good.
For sure. I mean, it, not just because this was a surprise profile of a federation that both of us didn't know was this close or had this many wrestlers to do it. It was also because the way what's the story, the episode was constructed, was really a joy to watch and a joy to behold. And what's the next one? Is there another one or is this it for the season?
No, no. They had a new episode last night. It was the last ride of the Road Warriors. Talking about Road Warrior, Animal, and Hawk. I watched it today. I'll save my comments for next time.
So maybe we'll do it on Friday or next week when we do another live episode.
I'll save my comments.
Okay. Let's just say that. All right.
We'll save it till we're live, brother.
All right. I respect that. I want to watch that one. All right. We've got over the hour mark. We should probably wrap it up here. Aaron, any last words you want to say about this episode?
I had a lot of fun talking about CM Punk and John Cena and all that stuff. Thank you guys for suggesting that. That's one of like the hottest suggestions that there's been. So I love seeing that. So if you want to tweet at me and tell me like stuff we need to see, next week we've got Jerry Lynn versus Rob Van Dam from Hardcore Heaven. So we're going ECW. ECW. And we're talking about my second favorite wrestler of all time, Mr. Monday Night, Mr. Friday Night, Mr. Pay-Per-View, the whole effing show, Rob Van Dam, and I'm so excited about it. And John, I know he's a friend of yours, so I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about Rob Van Dam next week, and I hope you guys are too.
Wait, we'd be remiss not to mention this. Do you know Chris Jericho is officially a member of the Schmodown?
Yes, I'm very much aware. Yes.
We should have led with that. How stupid of me. I'm sorry. Chris Jericho is officially, he did a video and everything. He is part of the Schmodown, being managed by Roxy Stryer. Already people are trying to put him in the ring with me. Here's the deal. He's got to earn his shot against the Outlaw. And this is, if I was going into a federation and Ben and Jericho's one of the top stars, I don't get to walk up and demand a match, for God's sakes. I would have to earn my keep to get into a position where a match like that made sense.
Here you go. Here, cut a promo. There's his face. Cut a promo real quick. Just cut one.
I don't know how to cut a Jericho promo.
Let me tell you, Ruka, you're a stupid idiot. There you go.
Don't you ever say that to me again. I'll tell you that right now. I'll put you right on the list, Jericho. No, we're not ready for promos yet. I got to see what he does in the ring. Once he gets in the ring, then we'll see what's up, you know. But
also, for the record, this is a figure, Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 19. One of my favorite matches, and it's definitely, as Chris Jericho would say, it's on the list.
It's on the list. You're on the list. But great stuff. We're excited to have Chris Jericho, and of course, Kevin Smith is part of the Schmodown as well. Kind of crazy. We'll see if we ever get a match of those guys live, but right. It certainly was exciting to have that situation go down for us. All right, that's it. Follow Aaron at Only Aaron Turner. Give him some love there and ask him anything about wrestling. He loves to talk about it. Ask anything about the world as well. I'm going to bring Aaron on to Mornings with the Outlaw sometime in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have a little fun talking movies, talking pop culture. That's going to be fun too. I want more and more people to get to know Aaron so this show gets more and more viewers and more and more people behind it. And we're going to get a consistent time doing it live as well, so you all can depend on it every week and enjoy it. Enjoy watching it or listening to it as much as we enjoy doing it. You can follow me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe below. Would really love it if you could subscribe below and get us above that 15,000 mark as we march towards the 20,000 mark of subscribers. But also don't forget, if you're watching this, you can also listen to us on the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network. I stripped the audio off the episodes and put it right up there. So this audio will be up there. So if you're listening to us now on the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network, thank you very much. But please go and subscribe to the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network. Want to get above 1,000, 2,000 subscribers so people are consistently listening to the shows and giving it some love and giving the channel some love. All right, that's it for me. We'll talk to you next time on another brand new episode of Strong Style.